So hi, my name is Matt Yost. I'm going to be talking about nitrogen management of switchgrass and miscanthus on marginal soils. So for a long time, there's been a lot of interest in placing or targeting perennials on marginal landscapes for a lot of good reasons. I'm going to talk briefly about three of those, particularly as they pertain to our area, which is in Missouri, in the Missouri landscape. So first, good reason for targeting perennials is that corn production in some areas of our landscape is not profitable in many years. This was a study conducted by Ray Massey and others at our research unit, and this is over 10 or 11 years of production. You can see that there's many areas of this field, particularly the eroded spots, that are not conducive to profitable corn production. A second reason is that perennials have been shown to reduce soil erosion or sediment loss and to improve water quality by reducing the transport of chemicals, nutrients, and herbicides. This is an example of one study that showed when you place them in the right place that it really helps with those issues, which are very prevalent in our area. And third, perennials help to make soil great again. I had to throw that in there, sorry. But seriously, they have been demonstrated to help improve soil function, soil health. This is a range of systems and a SMAF index or score, just a soil management assessment framework, one of the most common tools used now for estimating the health or function of the soil. So I'm going to talk first about miscanthus and how our experience with establishing it, growing it, and then fertilizing it with nitrogen. So I'm going to talk a little bit more today than just about nitrogen, so you get a little bonus. But first, establishing miscanthus. We have learned that larger rhizomes that are longer and heavier result in better establishment, as measured by more biomass in the year of planting, more tillers, and sometimes a larger basal circumference, and also better winter survival. So we need to plant larger rhizomes. Second, we measured miscanthus growth, on 22 farmer fields in Missouri and in Arkansas. We also measured yield on research plots, which are shown in red on this figure, in mid-Missouri, so in that center section. What we found is that region had a minor impact on the growth or yield of young miscanthus stands, and that there was a lot of variation in growth, but that we also were able to obtain yields that were comparable to other more productive soils, which indicates that miscanthus may and does actually do quite well on eroded or marginal soils. Likewise, we found quite a bit of variation in miscanthus growth across landscapes, but there seemed to be a minor impact of landscape position on the actual yield of miscanthus. So now that we've talked about establishing it and growing it, talk a little bit about fertilizing it, particularly with nitrogen. Miscanthus as a perennial crop may need to be fertilized differently than annual crops. We may need to think about it in more of a perennial way. And so we hypothesized that applying nitrogen as a priming rate, where we would put more nitrogen on up front and then less later, might actually be a better strategy than applying fertilizer every year. Because the plants are efficient, others have shown they're efficient at retaining and recycling nitrogen. So in this study, we had three young stands shown there on the right, and then one old stand on the left. And we found, so we measured growth for two different priming rates, where we put, let's see if I can get the show here, where we put more nitrogen on in the first year after planting and then less the next 2 years. Our second priming strategy was a higher rate the first year and then a moderate rate the next 2 years. And then we compared that to other constant rates, where we put on 67 kilograms of nitrogen each year and then a high rate each of the 3 years. And what we found is that nitrogen priming really provided no benefits. This site right here was the most responsive to nitrogen. And what I'm showing here is the yield across three years. So it's the total yield of the miscanthus across the first 3 years of production. And so this site here was the most responsive to nitrogen, and that constant rate of 67 kilograms nitrogen per hectare per year produced a yield that was statistically equivalent to higher rates. Likewise, the second location here responded to nitrogen, but only in the third year, 2015. But the total yield across years also showed that if we applied 67 kilograms of nitrogen per year, we increased yield, but we again had no benefit from higher rates or priming rates. And then at the third location, keep losing my cursor. At a third location, we had no response to nitrogen in each year or the total across the 3 years. And then in an older stand where we put some nitrogen on up front and then put on a suite of either no nitrogen or nitrogen each year or every other year, we again at this site with an old stand found no response to nitrogen. I want to point out something that we noted that others have noted. This site that was most responsive to nitrogen was a place where miscanthus was planted following a corn soybean production versus other sites that had either hay production or a CRP. And so it indicates that the previous cropping history may actually be quite important when we're thinking about fertilizing miscanthus with nitrogen. And last, I'm going to point out that a few studies have tried to predict nitrogen response in miscanthus, which actually is a very important thing because miscanthus often does not require any nitrogen. And so that we need tools to identify when we should fertilize. Therefore, we looked at one tool, leaf chlorophyll content, and found that relative leaf chlorophyll content, so the difference between the fertilized and the non-fertilized miscanthus, might actually be a tool that can separate responsive and non-responsive sites. So what I'm showing here, the dashed line indicates site years that were responsive to nitrogen. And in June, when it was measured, relative leaf chlorophyll content below about 85% indicated that those sites were responsive to nitrogen. So it may be an effective tool to help guide nitrogen applications. So I want to move to switchgrass, where we tried to examine how topsoil depth influences the productivity, the profitability, the harvest management, and the nitrogen management of switchgrass. First, switchgrass had the greatest relative yield compared to corn and soybean across soil depths, and it was the most stable. However, switchgrass was not the most profitable. It was less profitable than both grain crops on most soil depths, except at the very shallow depth, where switchgrass was slightly more profitable than corn. This indicates that switchgrass placement may need to be at the worst spots on the landscape, the spots that have the shallowest topsoil. We also found that a single biomass harvest of switchgrass was more productive and more profitable than a two-cut system, where it was harvested for forage and then later harvested as biomass. And last, 101 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare was needed to maximize or produce the greatest switchgrass yield at all of the soil depths. 67 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare was sufficient at the deepest topsoil. However, less nitrogen was needed to increase or produce the greatest profit. So depending on the price scenario of switchgrass and nitrogen, either no nitrogen or 67 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare were sufficient to produce the greatest profit across soil depths. So in summary, both crops were quite productive on marginal eroded soils, and both had moderate response to nitrogen, moderate or no response to nitrogen, depending on whether economics were factored. I also just want to point out again that there needs to be more focus on return to nitrogen for both of these crops, and especially for miscanthus, which often doesn't respond to nitrogen. And then again, we really need to develop tools that can predict or estimate when, particularly when miscanthus will require nitrogen to maximize yield and, more importantly, to maximize profit. With that, I'll say thanks and take questions. Yeah. We did, yes. I don't show it here, but forage quality was, the topsoil depth had minor impacts on the forage quality of that first cut. So we only looked at forage quality in the two-cut system because it was the system that had a forage harvest. So just in that system alone, the two-cut system, topsoil depth had minor impacts on the forage quality. Other questions? I left plenty of time for questions. So
that's one part of the reason that plant soils are there to crop production. And so does miscanthus or switchgrass have enough vigor to penetrate the clay panel?
It's a very, very good question, and a question that we are just wanting to investigate. So in this study, there's not a lot of data on what happens at the clay pan. We know that we know from other research that crops do penetrate it, that corn and soybean penetrate, and switchgrass and miscanthus most definitely probably penetrate as well. But we really don't have a lot of data on what happens. And so one thing that we'd like to do is on this study that I showed results from, where we have different topsoil depths above the clay pan, we'd really like to look at the roots and what's happening above, at, and below the clay pan to see how the perennial crops compare to the annual crops. So it's an important question. We don't really have enough data on it, but it's something that we would like to learn more about. Carl.
We're looking at some similar crops in southeastern U.S. soils. We tend to have very low residual nitrogen levels.
Possibly. It's hard to speculate. The old stand that had been in place for about 7 or 8 years was not requiring nitrogen. It did have nitrogen up front, so it's difficult to say whether, if it was unfertilized that whole time period, whether it would respond to nitrogen. But from everything we've seen on that stand, it doesn't seem like it's going to require nitrogen anytime in the near future. The other stands, the younger stands that we looked at, it's hard to speculate whether they'll continue to need nitrogen. We definitely think the site that has been responding every year, so I showed the first 3 years in 2016, this year, we haven't harvested yet, but it's definitely going to respond to nitrogen. You can see visual differences in the miscanthus. So, it's difficult to speculate, but the sites, from the trends that we can see in our data, it looks like the sites that are needing nitrogen always need nitrogen, and the ones that don't are still not needing nitrogen. So And I think other studies have also shown that even long-term stands, 10 plus years, can sometimes require no nitrogen. No.
Your profitability analysis just was the profit of the commodity. How would you go about putting some value to the difference in more of the sustainability or environmental value associated between an annual crop and a perennial crop and the effects on carbon storage or preventing soil loss or whatever, to where you could say something more than just a commodity?
That's a very good question, but very difficult to answer. We know that switchgrass and miscanthus are providing services, ecosystem services, but how we quantify that with a price tag is very difficult. Something that we did try to do was in this scenario where we compared the profit or return of switchgrass versus corn and soybean. We also tried a scenario where we added a CRP payment for the switchgrass, which is probably the closest thing to an environmental service payment that we could think of that exists right now. So we added that payment for the switchgrass in this scenario, and it pushed the lineup for switchgrass a little bit, and so it made it more profitable than corn at a little bit deeper soil depths, but it's still, in most cases, at most depths, corn was still more profitable, even when we added a CRP payment. So, other questions? I think you had your hand up.
I was just wondering how does one create soil depths for plot studies?
Very carefully. That's a good question. These plots were created about 30 years ago, and they were manufactured. So soil was scraped down to the clay pan and then placed on plots at different depths. So it's difficult to say how well that relates to actual field conditions and how well it represents an actual soil profile. But it's about the best thing that we can do to recreate different topsoil depths in a replicated way.